Good morning, men.
Good morning.
Well, it's been an awesome weekend for me. Love being out here. Thank you guys. Thank the speakers. And definitely want to thank, I know there's a ton of stuff that goes on behind the scenes to get all this ready, organize it, and you guys don't get to get up here. And so thank you for doing that. I really do appreciate it. Turn with me, if you don't mind, to Ephesians 5, 7 through 10. I'm going to read it. It says, "Therefore, do not be partakers with them, for you were formerly darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of the light consists in all goodness and righteousness and truth, trying to learn what is pleasing to the Lord." So notice that last statement, trying to learn what is pleasing to the Lord. We talk a lot at these conferences, this conference, about being a slave of Christ. Winston mentioned that yesterday in the passage on Luke 17:10. And of course, I agree completely. That is the goal of our life, is to try to learn how to be a slave of Jesus, how to be servants and slaves to others. There's no better way to spend this life on earth, and there's no better way to prepare ourselves for heaven than learning what it means to be a slave of Jesus. So if we take a step back and ask ourselves, what does it mean to be a slave of Jesus? How do we do that if we want to do that well? And I would suggest it's that little statement there in Ephesians verse 10, trying to learn what is pleasing to the Lord. If you want to be a servant of your wife, a good starting point is try to learn what's pleasing to your wife. If you want to be a servant of your neighbor, of your kids, anybody, especially Jesus Christ, try to learn what is pleasing to them. And this book that we all have in front of us is God's revelation to us to teach us how to be pleasing to Him. All the important questions of life. How do I spend my life? What do I think about? What's expected of me? How do I spend my time? What's good? What's evil? Lord, how can I please you? All those questions are the point of the book that's in front of you. So there's a command that's of very clear, central importance in both the Old Testament and the New Testament that I think very much is under this umbrella of how do I learn what is pleasing to the Lord. And that's the command to honor our parents. So that's the command that I've been tasked with talking about with you guys today. And it's my hope, it's my goal that I can communicate to you why I think this is such an important command. And hopefully I can provoke your thinking on this subject so that we can all hopefully obey this command better. So let me pray. Dear Father, again, I just thank you for this time together. I thank you for these men. Thank you for all the families that are represented here, for our wives and kids back home, our parents back home. I pray that this, everything we've learned this weekend, that this would change us, that we would be able to apply when we go back home. Father, your word says that the goal of our instruction is love. And I pray that everything that has gone on this weekend, all the instruction, all this wonderful teaching, biblical teaching we've heard, I pray that the point of it all is that we can love better. It's in Jesus' name I pray. Amen. So a lot of you guys know there is a book in the back table called Honoring Your Parents, and it's a great book. I commend it to you. And my thinking, I'll just be very straightforward with you. My thinking has been greatly influenced by that book, and will not have a lot of original or any original thoughts for you this morning. So I'm going to plagiarize, I guess, another way of saying it. I come from the medical or scientific world. Plagiarism is very much looked down upon. It's a crime, and rightfully so. That's in the scientific world. Just briefly, a word about plagiarism. I think from a Christian biblical viewpoint, it's a different story. We talk about 2 Timothy 2:2 a lot at these conferences. The things which you have heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, entrust these to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. If that's true, then if you find truth, you got to plagiarize it. And that's at the heart of discipleship, is passing on truth to other people, to faithful men. So I'm going to try to do that this morning. So I want to briefly share with you my own story, just so you guys know where I'm coming from as I talk about parents. When I was 21, summer before my senior year of college, my parents got divorced. And I know that's not an uncommon experience. It's very, very common. I'm sure a lot of the men here have gone through that in some capacity. And then 6 years ago, my wife's parents were divorced. And so I walked through that with her as well. Three out of the four of our parents have been remarried, such that I have seven parents now, four on my wife's side, three on my own side. So with seven parents, I figured this is a command that I need to wrap my mind around. So here we are. I think the goal of this life is to get to know Jesus better and prepare ourselves for our eternity with him. God created you so that he could have a relationship with you. That is an awesome thought to me, and just wanted to share that with you. He loves relationships, and he created you for him. There's two major themes in the Bible that I think help frame us, or help us to just think through how we go about doing that. How do we go about knowing Jesus better, pleasing him better? Those two major themes, I would say, one is authority, and the second one is love. And so as I go through this talk on honoring parents, I want you to kind of think through the content through the lens of those two ideas, authority and love. And ask yourself, so as I'm going through it, how does honoring, what's the relationship between honoring and authority? What's the relationship between honoring and love? All right, so let me dive into the material. I'm not sure I have a pointer. There we go. Thank you. So I just want to kind of take a brief look at some of the very central verses in the Bible on this subject. This will be review for most of you guys, but I think it's a good starting point. So we find this command to honor your parents in both the Old Testament and New Testament. There's a whole lot of verses on this, and I'm not going to review all of them, obviously, but I just want to kind of start with some of the central ones. So Exodus 20:12, the Ten Commandments, honor your father and your mother, that your days may be prolonged in the land which the Lord your God gives you. This command is repeated, not word for word, but similar in Deuteronomy chapter 5, where the Ten Commandments are repeated. The command is the fifth out of Ten Commandments. The first four commands have to do with our relationship with God in a vertical manner. The last six commands have to do with our relationship with others in a horizontal manner. The command to honor our parents is the first of those horizontal commands. And as such, I think it's a bridge between our vertical relationship with God and our horizontal relationship with others. Your relationship with your parents is probably the closest thing we have to a relationship with God in this life. I don't think there's any relationship in this life that resembles that relationship more. And so as such, I think it really does form a bridge between those two concepts. This is a chapter later in Exodus, kind of the same thing stated in a opposite way. There's a number of passages like this in the Old Testament. I'm just going to read one. Exodus 21:17, he who curses his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. That's a really hard thing to imagine if in this day and age. But I show this to you, one, to emphasize the importance that God places on this commandment. There's a number of verses like this. The punishment is you get put to death if you curse your mother or father. One more in the Old Testament. I want to share with you Deuteronomy 21, 18 through 21. If any man has a stubborn and rebellious son who will not obey his father or his mother, and when they chastise him, he will not even listen to them, then his father and mother shall seize him and bring him out to the elders of his city at the gateway of his hometown. They shall say to the elders of his city, "This son of ours is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey us. He is a glutton and a drunkard." Then all the men of his city shall stone him to death. So you shall remove the evil from your midst, and all Israel will hear of it and fear. Again, that's hard for me to wrap my mind around. Same God, though. Same God here, same God that we worship here at this conference. And notice the word here is not honor. The word here is obey. But again, I think you see a strong connection between these ideas of obeying and honoring. We'll talk about that a little bit more as we go on. So, New Testament. I think this verse or this command is most clearly stated in a passage in Ephesians chapter 6. It says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with a promise, so that it may be well with you and that you may live long on the earth." The command to honor our parents is referenced a number of other places in the New Testament. We're not going to go look at those this morning, but this is really where you see it very, very clearly stated. So a couple observations about this. The command, both in the Old Testament and the New Testament, is connected with a promise. And Paul states that very clearly here. In the Old Testament, the promise is connected to the land. So it's a promise that's to the nation of Israel. In the New Testament, it's obviously not for the nation Israel. The word land is omitted, and it's connected to this life on this earth. We've talked a lot at this conference this weekend about the law of the harvest being eternal, meaning that there is eternal accountability. You will be judged, and that judgment, that fairness, that justice might be seen temporally, might not. For sure it is seen eternally. This is one of the rare New Testament verses where a promise actually is connected temporally. Temporally just means here on earth. And that's interesting, and I thought a lot about that, and I'm not sure I really came to a conclusion on what this means or who this is to specifically. But I think just generally speaking, it means if you honor your parents, your efforts, temporally speaking, will not be wasted. It will go well with you on the days, however many days that is. It will be to your benefit. How we define that, of course, is it's God's definition, not ours. We don't get any say in how that's defined, but we can trust that it's absolutely in our best interest. So this is one of the few New Testament, there are some others, I think, but this is one of the few commands where the promise is connected to our life here on earth. I do think there's an eternal component as well, but for sure it's specifically our temporal life. Just a second observation at this point. This command, again, is connected to obedience. Obedience and authority, you know, two of the same concepts. And I think that in the home, when you're young with your parents, that is the training ground to learn obedience, to learn what authority means. And if kids learn that, that's all they learn growing up. Parents will have done their kids a tremendous, tremendous blessing. I don't care how smart they are, how gifted, how talented, whatever else their parents teach them. If their parents teach, instill in them obedience and authority, respect for authority, it will go well for those kids. If kids don't learn authority in the home, the price just gets steeper and steeper and steeper as you get older. The stakes only get higher if they don't learn it there. All right, so I want to talk about the word honor. If we're going to obey this command to honor our parents, we have to wrestle with what this word means. The Greek word here is temeo, and if you look up in a Strong's Concordance or any concordance, the definition of that word temeo means to fix the value or to prize. A good paraphrase that I'm stealing from the book in the back, to ascribe worth to, is what that means. So to fix the value, to prize, to ascribe worth to. So I want to toss around that idea for a moment. We're talking about value and worth here. Value, prize, worth. So how do we know how much something is worth? How do we know how valuable something is? When I was 9 years old, 1985, I got really into baseball cards. My dad taught me a great lesson that I have remembered to this day very, very clearly. So that was a popular thing back then. I don't know if any of you guys my age got into that. But I loved collecting cards, learned all the baseball players, and there was this magazine called Beckett's Magazine, and it listed all the prices or the value. You know, if your card's in mint condition, it's worth this much. If it's in excellent condition, if it's in good condition, it's like a Kelly's Blue Book for baseball cards. And I would pour through that, you know, every month or quarter, whatever it came out, and I thought I was big stuff. I had a rookie Cal Ripken. It was worth probably $30 or something like that. And when you're 9 years old in 1985, that's a lot of money. So I had these cards that were kind of, you know, worth a few bucks or whatever, and I thought that was really cool. My dad said, you know, I'm not sure it's actually worth what that magazine says. The real way to know how much those cards are worth, let's go to the market. Or, let's go see what people, how much are people going to pay for that card? What are those guys at the, booths at the market or at the baseball card store, what are they going to pay for you? Sure enough, I'd take the cards, and they wouldn't offer, 10% what Beckett said it was worth. That was a bummer to me, but I thought, that's a lot of wisdom right there. It's not what the magazine says it's worth. It's what somebody will pay for it. And that's how we determine the value of something. What will somebody pay for it? The real estate market is a great illustration. In Phoenix, we get a lot of those boom and bust cycles. So same house in 2010, it's worth a whole lot less than it was in 2005. That same house today, 2018, it's worth a whole lot more than it was in 2010. So same exact house, way differing values in terms of what somebody is going to pay for it. So I think that illustrates that very well. So the act of honoring our parents means that we ascribe a value to our parents. No matter what their actual value is, we're going to talk about what that value is as we go on. It doesn't matter. Our job is to value them, to prize them, to ascribe a worth to them, irrespective of what their actual worth is. So let's unpack this a little bit more. Take a look at this figure with me. This is a very rough, very oversimplified timeline of our life. We start as a baby, we go through childhood, get bigger, get older, go through adulthood, go through middle age, go through prime of your life, get older, older, and if God doesn't take you first, you enter the elderly stage and eventually die. So I want to make two observations from this. First, I think when we are in the infancy, baby, young kid stage, how we honor our parents is highly connected to obeying. We honor our parents by obedience. If you think about it, you don't have a lot of decisions when you're young. You don't make a lot of decisions. You're doing what your parents have you do. It's for sure true when you're 6 months old, 18 months old. But even as you get a little bit of independence, as you go older, your life as a 5-year-old, as an 8-year-old, is very much under your parents. And so it's very straightforward at that standpoint. I don't think it's simple, but I think it's very straightforward. You obey your parents, and that's how you honor them. It's all through obedience. As you get older into adulthood, you're making your own decisions now. You're your own man. And I think then you have to kind of think through differently what honor looks like. But at the kid stage, it's all about obedience. Second observation to make here is that as we do grow older and get to adulthood, the target of who we're honoring changes too. We get to know our parents as kids. They're in the prime of their life. That's how we get to know them. Once you're my age, you know, somewhere around my age or older, your parents now are in the elderly stage. And there, I think it's a whole different ball game and a whole different set of things you have to think about as we think about honoring your parents. And that's really where I want to kind of target the rest of my comments on somebody who's, you know, around my age or older and has parents that are older and increasingly older. What does this look like to honor our parents? And I think at that point, this value and worth really come into play to think through that. I'm going to show you a quote from the book in the back, Honoring Your Parents. Let me read it to you. Aging parents are not like the child. The more energy put into the child, the more the child grows and develops. This is not true for the aging parent. There is no reciprocal growth in the parent for the time invested. The parent is a depreciating asset. The child must love and support without expectations. The parent will continually and gradually slip out of the child's hands into the grave. So I want to focus there on a depreciating asset. Obviously, that's worldly speaking, but worldly speaking, that is so true. So let me contrast here for a second a baby and an elderly parent. Babies have four needs: to be kept warm, to be clean, to be fed, and to be loved. When we reach old age, at the last leg of the race, it's the same deal. Elderly parents have four needs, same ones: be loved, be kept warm, to be clean, and be fed. As we get older, we come full circle. There's one big difference between the two, though. That baby is cute. And that baby is going to grow older. And those parents, they have so much hope and expectation. And that baby, almost every day of its life, you see it getting stronger and smarter and more capable. And you have dreams for that kid. And you just can't imagine how good is he going to be at soccer when he's 16, and how smart is he going to be. And you just you naturally ascribe value to that little baby, even though he's offers no more than the elderly parent. You naturally ascribe value. There's nothing more natural to do than to ascribe value to that little baby that's totally hopeless and is totally dependent on you. For the parent, the older parent, it's exactly the opposite. So wherever your parents are in life right now, even if they haven't reached this stage, they are going there. There's nothing you can do about it. They are inexorably marching down a road of less function, less value, more cost. All this is obviously temporally speaking. They're adding less to the equation all the time. And it's not dignified. It's not pretty. It's the opposite of that young baby. The baby gets stronger. The parent just gets weaker. So if we define honor as ascribing value to, again, there's nothing more natural than ascribing value to a young baby who's getting more valuable all the time. And it's extremely unnatural, I would suggest to you, to honor an aging and dying parent. This takes a change in our attitude, in our mindset, and it's an act of the will. So that's really the point I want to make about honoring our parents. It's an attitude that precedes an action. It's a mindset that we have to cultivate. It is not a one-off action. A one-off action can be part of this, but it is not, in and of itself, a one-off action. It's a mindset that we cultivate that leads to a lifetime of action. And it all stems from a willful and proactive decision on our part to think long and hard about our parents and purpose in our minds that we are going to ascribe value to them. We are going to place a value on them. So before we even think about any application or any specifics of how we're going to do this, I think absolutely the first step is to go through this mental process of deciding for yourself what value are you going to put on your parents. As we learn to ascribe value to our parents and to all people, I think we actually mimic God in how he treats us. He ascribes a value to us that we do not have. When he sent his son Jesus to die for us, he declared in front of the whole watching universe what your value was. He bought you, he redeemed you away from the dominion of sin that we all belong to, and the price was Jesus, his son. Honoring your parents means ascribing value to people that have depreciating worldly value. It's an imputed or ascribed value, and that's the key of it. So this exercise of ascribing value to people is very fundamental to us as we learn how to love people. We have to learn to see people not as they are in the fleshly sense. Refers back to the 2 Corinthians 5:16 verse that Winston shared with us yesterday. All of us, we know who we are. We're wretched, we're dirty, we're irritating, we're mean, and a whole lot less flattering words than that. And we have to learn to see people the way that God sees us. God sent his son, Jesus, to die for you. That's the price he paid. That's how much value he said you are worth. And we have to learn, if we're going to learn how to love people and honor people, in particular our parents, we have to see the world through that lens. We have to ascribe a value to them that Jesus and God ascribed. And so I think this exercise of honoring our parents is a great training ground for learning how to love people. Let me go through three principles, and then I'll finish up with three principles here. Number one, the command to honor your parents is not conditional on your parents being worthy of honor. You're commanded to honor your parents irrespective of how well they've done in this life, both as a parent and just in life in general. If your mother is a whore and your father's a murderer, doesn't matter. Your command is to honor them, to ascribe value to them. When you honor your parents, you affirm God's goodness in giving you the parents that he did. They were chosen by God as the best environment for you to learn how to prepare yourself for heaven. And when we fail to honor our parents, we communicate to God that we resent his choice in choosing the parents that he chose for us. Winston said yesterday, your father, your mother, is the perfect parent for you. Not that they are perfect, but it's perfect because that's exactly who God chose to give you as a parent. And you have to do business with that. God is sovereign. He gave you your parents, and he chose them for you in your best interest and in love for you. And that's true for every single man in this room. In a room this size, there are men here that have had horrible parents. Parents that beat them and did any number of other unspeakable things to them. And if we don't learn that our job is to honor them, forgive them, we've missed, I think, everything, all the lessons of Job this weekend. And you have to get that straight in your mind. It's not for the parents' sake. It is for their sake to some degree. It's for your sake, men. God gave this to you, this command, for your best interests, so that you don't live with bitterness about this, and that you learn to let this go and forgive. All right, second principle is that you answer to God and not to your parents in deciding what honoring your parents looks like. In other words, it's not up to your parents to decide what honoring them looks like. It's up to you to decide that, and you have to answer to God. So in your pursuit to honor your parents, you answer to God, not your parents. The quality of your effort will not be measured by your parents' response. Um, had a couple illustrations for that. I'm going to, just in the sake of time, move on and just not elaborate on that. Third principle, honor, but do not immortalize. Honor your parents, but do not immortalize them. The biblical mandate for us all in regards to family structure is to leave and cleave. Genesis 2:24, for this reason a man shall leave his father and his mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. This means that when the time is right, we leave our parents. We separate from them, and we join together. If it's God's will for us to get married, we join together with a woman, and we become one with her. That command is quoted again several times in the New Testament. Mark chapter 10, Matthew chapter 19. Paul quotes it in Ephesians chapter 5. So we must always move forward in this life. We don't look back. We're going to heaven. This is not the main event. We're not called to create an empire here on this life, in our family. It's not a patriarchal system. Your parents are going to the grave, and we honor them, and we cherish them. We cherish those memories, but just like their parents and their parents before them, they're going to the grave. It's what's going to happen to us. It's what's going to happen to our kids. So we don't immortalize them as they march towards death. The goal is heaven. We keep our eyes focused on heaven. And just as we leave and cleave, our kids are going to do that as well, and we have to help them do that and help them prepare for that. They're going to have their own identity, their own faith, their own purpose, their own family, and we got to set them up for that and not try to make it this, you know, immortalized patriarchal system. So help them establish boundaries. Boundaries are very important. To help with this, help them with that. All right, I think I'm just about out of time. Just wanted to go through two very brief applications. One is to express love to your parents, express honor to them. I mean, when I say express, I mean verbalize. There's a lot of other ways that we carry out this command, but I really think an important way is just communicating verbally. Do it in front of your parents. Do it in front of your kids. Let your kids hear you. Honor, ascribe value to your parents. And if your kids are not seeing you honor your parents, when the time comes, when you're in that situation, what chance do you think you'll have of them honoring you? So be good examples to your kids about what honoring parents looks like, because they are not going to see that in the world today. If they're going to learn it, they got one chance. It's from you. And second and last application, I just want to just briefly mention the leadership of the husband and the husband's responsibility. You and your wife are one. You share parents. Her parents are your parents. Your parents are her parents. And as the leader of your home, you are God's agent to execute honor to your parents, to your wife's parents. Men, we have to accept this responsibility. We have to step up to the plate and do it. It is not always going to be clear what honoring looks like. You, as the leader of the home, have the burden, have the privilege of deciding what that looks like in your family. You're going to answer to God on it one day. It's not always going to be clear, but we will answer to God, and it's up to us to do this. So, men, thank you very much.